It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're also learning more about Trump's inaugural address. We're told that the president-elect will present himself as the president of all people, all Americans, in a speech that will lean heavily toward the idea of America first. We're also told he spent much of this past weekend rewriting it in his own words and did at least one run-through with the teleprompter. And he'll use two Bibles for his swearing-in, one a gift from his mother when he left Sunday school, the other the same Lincoln Bible that Barack Obama used in 2009.
All right, that was John Roberts of Fox. And, of course, this is Sandy Rios with you. And we are really hours away from Donald Trump being sworn in as president of the United States. And you just heard the two Bibles he's using. Mike Pence is actually having the Bible that Ronald Reagan swore his oath of office on flown in to swear on. And he's importing a different justice. He won't be sworn in by Justice John Roberts, Chief Justice, but by Justice Clarence Thomas, which is pretty amazing. And so tomorrow is going to be a very big day. It still is a very big week here in Washington. And people, of course, are either out on the streets raising cane, shall we say. We use cane. And then we have a lot of people just thrilled, happy, relieved, and grateful. So we'll see which force kind of it prevails, where the prevailing winds go as the news unfolds. And then there are people that are speculating about how Donald Trump might change some things. There was an article in the New York Times about how the establishment left here in Washington is a little apoplectic and threatened about how their way of life may be altered. Well, there are other ways that things may be altered. Let's listen to this report.
On Thursday afternoon, Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence will lay wreaths on the graves of soldiers at Arlington Cemetery. His inaugural committee says that's one of the most important traditions that Trump is excited to uphold at the start of his inauguration ceremonies this weekend. Then on Thursday evening, Trump and Melania Trump, the soon-to-be First Lady, will stay overnight at the Blair House. It's the president's guest house operated by the State Department and typically reserved for visiting foreign dignitaries. But it's a tradition that incoming presidents will stay there the evening before their inauguration that started in 1977 with incoming President Jimmy Carter. And then, of course, in the morning, Trump and Melania Trump will attend church service at St. John's Episcopal Church, the so-called Church of the Presidents, with Obama and the First Lady. That's a tradition that goes all the way back to FDR. And then, finally, Trump and Melania Trump will head to the White House and have a private visit with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. They'll have coffee before they ride over to the Capitol for the swearing-in ceremonies. We're going to see a shorter inaugural parade, shorter by about an hour and a half, and people are saying it'll be one of the shortest parades in recent memory. His inaugural committee is billing that as an effort to just get immediately back to work. Announcing that parade will be a new voice. Charles Brotman has announced inaugural parades, the participants in them, for the past 11 presidents. But this year, the Trump team has tapped someone new, a Washington, D.C.-based announcer named Steve Ray. And finally, we won't see a D.C. public school marching band participating in the parade this year. For the past five inaugurations, a local marching band from a local high school has marched in the parade. None applied to do so this year, though.
All right, that was Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner. That's just some of the many trivial things that people are talking about. But, of course, we feel the ground shifting beneath our feet here in Washington for very good reasons. And meanwhile, just a few blocks away, something else is taking place. We have an outgoing president who is using his pen and his phone to do any number of things. Let's listen to this report from CNN.
Chelsea Manning has served about 7 years of a 35-year sentence, and President Obama has decided to commute that sentence. She will be released in May, according to the White House. Now, this makes a total of 1,385 commutations, 212 pardons, a total of 1,597 acts of clemency by this president, far outpacing his previous presidents from Reagan to Bush to Obama. So this is a big number that President Obama has issued today, 209 commutations, 64 pardons. Obviously, a leak that many in national security circles believe was incredibly damaging. Some people say that she had blood on her hands because of some of the information that was leaked from State Department files. And so the reaction is going to be swift from people there who, in the national security area, who believe that she did not deserve to get out of prison right now. We'll see what the reaction is at this point. But again, that's the surprise announcement from the White House.
Yeah, it's a surprise announcement, all right. And so that was Evan Perez of CNN, by the way. And it's about, we could talk about all of the things that President Obama is doing, like releasing Gitmo prisoners. It's just, what is he doing? But today, this week, he chose, in spite of all the things he might have done, to release someone who did something very seriously damaging that caused the death of people. I don't know if that's quantifiable because of these leaks, and that was Bradley Manning. And I've asked Peter Sprigg to join me in studio. Peter is a senior fellow for policy studies. I am actually in the studios of FRC today, thanks to them and their generosity. And I've asked Peter, who's joined me many times over the phone, to join me in person here in the studios. Peter, thanks for doing that.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. This is an interesting story because it has a lot of two major things we could discuss. And that is this whole Bradley-Chelsea Manning thing, which you're an expert on. And in a few minutes, General Jerry Boykin's going to join us to talk about the national security aspect of this. But let's first of all talk about how this started, Peter. As I recall, because I covered this pretty carefully, Bradley Manning leaked these email because he was upset over he was in a quarrel with his gay lover, and that's how this all started. It was just like an act of vengeance, as I recall.
Well, I don't know that particular detail, but certainly the history of this incident has revealed that he had numerous struggles with both his sexual orientation and his gender identity, and clearly mental problems, psychological problems related to those things. Now, I would argue that may be symptomatic of why it was a mistake to repeal the law against homosexuals in the military and why it is a mistake to pursue the policy that the Obama administration announced just last year of allowing transgender people to serve in the military, because those conditions are correlated with mental health problems as well as physical health problems.
And Bradley had top secret clearance and was in a position to have access to this information, right?
Right.
And that's the problem. He was unstable. And as I remember distinctly that there was a quarrel between him and his love interest, mm-hmm. and that this was kind of an act of vengeance. He was trying to get back. I don't know any details beyond that. So that's how this thing broke, and that didn't make major news, Peter. I just remember reading that from other sources. So that's how this started. And what do you know? We can ask General Boykin when he joins us about the details of that. But he actually had access to all these email through WikiLeaks.
Well, he as an Army intelligence analyst, he had access to a number of confidential documents, and he released them through WikiLeaks, over 700,000 files, just an astonishing number, the kind of thing that is only possible in the digital age, basically just copying all these files digitally and then releasing them. Now, it's interesting to me, and again, I mentioned before we went on the air that after this commutation of his sentence, I've been doing, I followed this story, but I've been doing a lot more research about it since this announcement from the White House. And the argument that's been made in favor of the commutation is, well, this is a unusually long sentence for what his sympathizers are calling a leaker or a whistleblower. They put him in the category of people who are exposing government misconduct, because supposedly part of his motivation for part of the documents that he released were exposing misconduct, civilian casualties committed by U.S. military forces in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they consider him a whistleblower. But he was, in fact, convicted of espionage. So I think it's reasonable to think of him not just as a whistleblower, but as a spy. But if you even compare him with other, quote-unquote, whistleblowers or leakers, usually they are more selective in the information that they leak, whereas Manning simply downloaded 700,000 files and released them to the public. Usually they might release them to a news organization, and then that news organization itself goes through a process of deciding, A, what of this information is relevant for the public to know, and B, what of this information might be damaging to national security, and therefore should we not release, even though it has come into our hands. By releasing these documents on WikiLeaks, those vetting processes did not take place that might happen with a typical quote-unquote leak. So in a sense, I think what Manning did was more dangerous than a typical leaker, than what a typical leaker does. And therefore, that argument really doesn't carry a lot of weight.
Well, let's talk about shortly after he was arrested, put in prison, then we find out that he wants to be a woman. I don't think we knew that before this. I don't think so. And then suddenly he immediately almost wanted to start being called Chelsea.
Right. And the government, the military at that time, it was the day after he was sentenced that it was publicly announced through his lawyers that he was transgender. He considered himself a woman, and he wanted to be referred to as Chelsea. Now, this is part of the research I had to do. That was 2013, I believe. In 2014, a civilian judge granted the request for a legal change of name to Chelsea. The military did not, the military said they would recognize the name change, but not the not the change of sex, basically. Then in 2015, a military judge actually ordered the military to begin referring to him using female pronouns in all communications. But even under that, my understanding was as of last year, just last month in December, a military doctor declined to recommend changing the official marker, gender marker, in the military record. So there's, but in terms of treatment, originally they said no, they're not. He's not going to be given any treatment to facilitate gender transition.
So hormone treatment and all the surgeries.
Right, but they have gradually backed off on that as well. First announcing that they would grant hormone treatment, and then last year announcing that they would grant gender reassignment surgery, although it is unclear from the sources that I've been able to find whether that surgery has actually taken place or not.
And I remember that's the last time Bradley Chelsea Manning was in the news, when they decided to pay, that our tax dollars would pay for a person who betrayed his country, caused, we think, the loss of life as a result of that. Now, we are going to pay the thousands of dollars to have him turned into a woman. It really is shocking. And now the President of the United States has commuted his sentence. We're going to ask General Jerry Boykin to join us, Peter, to continue this discussion, because I want to know what he thinks about it from a national security military perspective. And then we'll continue our discussion about this radical fundamental change in the military that's been overseen by President Barack Obama. This is C.A.D. Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Chelsea.
Leslie Manning, a transgender former Army intelligence analyst, convicted back in 2010 for leaking 750,000 pages of classified government documents to WikiLeaks, will soon go free. Manning's actions resulting in the Taliban targeting and killing U.S. soldiers overseas. President Obama ordering Manning's 35-year sentence cut short and released on May 17th. The White House even bragging about the president's record 1,385 commutations with 209 just on Tuesday and promising even more tomorrow. Meanwhile, lawmakers on both sides shocked.
I think it's dead wrong. Absolutely dead wrong. This is treason, espionage at the highest level. I'm, for one, not going to be supportive of these types of commutes whatsoever or pardons. I think they're wrong.
There's no doubt that it caused grave harm to our national security.
This could put individual operatives at risk. It put our national interests at risk with other countries.
But could Manning's commutation pave the way for other whistleblowers to get off the hook? Just last week, WikiLeaks tweeting about founder Julian Assange, quote, if Obama grants Manning clemency, Assange will agree to U.S. extradition despite clear unconstitutionality of DOJ case.
Well, that was interesting. That was Jackie Ibanez of CNN. It's interesting to me how they're reporting this because even they don't seem thrilled about it. I would think they'd be a little more elated, a little less implied criticism of the president, but will be grateful for small favors. I think it's a tragedy. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning, by the way, with you. Peter Sprigg is a senior fellow here at Family Research Council. And again, let me say thank you to FRC for letting me use their studios today. And General Jerry Boykin, who was the vice president around here, has also joined us. General Boykin, we were discussing the history of Bradley Manning, mm-hmm. All the way from him declaring himself Chelsea to the legal machinations and how finally, not long ago, they have decided even to pay for his complete, his hormone treatments and his transformation. And that's a whole other issue about how the military is treating that. But can you tell us what kind of damage we can know that Chelsea, Bradley Manning did? What was it? What was the substance? It's hard to quantify because there were so many of them, but what kinds of things did he leak that were so damaging?
Well, remember that he leaked 750,000 documents, both secret and sensitive documents. And some of them were diplomatic cables. So you want your enemies to know what your chief diplomats are saying to their State Department or to other ambassadors? That is so damaging. I mean, just so damaging. But on the battlefield, as Winston Churchill once said, that in wartime, the truth is so precious that it must be protected by a bodyguard of lies. What he was saying was, in wartime, you do not want the enemy to know the truth about what you're going to do, about what your capabilities are, your intentions. And what he did was he exposed our secrets, and that is egregious. That puts every young man and woman on the battlefield in jeopardy. And for those who say that his actions did not result in any deaths, the man, a retired brigadier general, who headed up the Information Release Task Force, which was what was put together to study the effects of or the impact of WikiLeaks, admitted to the judge that they can document at least one case in which an Afghan national was killed as a result of Manning's leak of information because that person was cooperating with American intelligence. So don't say that it didn't result in anybody being killed, because that's not the case. And I think it's probably far greater than certainly than the left would admit, but than the news has reported.
Part of the challenge may be that to release the information about what the consequences have been would itself violate confidentiality. The government may know about more consequences and not want to discuss it.
But we can be sure that our enemies are combing over those, just like people were combing over the WikiLeaks from John Podesta. Mm-hmm. You know, so they come out over a series of, even though we may not know, they're studying them mm-hmm. and using them, and we may never know. Mm-hmm. So when Bradley Manning was sentenced, I'm curious to know why was the word treason used? Isn't that treason, General?
Well, yes, it is treason, and he was also charged with aiding the enemy.
Why wasn't he executed?
Well, that's a good question. And I don't know why Bo Bergdahl wasn't. You know, I mean, what he did was desertion and aiding the enemy. Both of those in wartime are punishable by death. So I don't know what the you know, what the judicial system was looking at or why they made that decision. And I don't know the last time there was anybody executed for treason. It has happened. But that said, he certainly, the idea that he got 35 years and that's just more than anybody's gotten in a long time, it wasn't enough as far as I'm concerned, given what he did. Look, this is not a guy like General Jim Cartwright, who was also punished.
And pardoned.
And pardoned.
By the president.
But there's a big difference between talking to a reporter and either deliberately or inadvertently releasing some kind of information, and releasing 750,000 classified documents that expose everything that we're doing, that actually included videos of some of our activities and our operations, that exposed agents that we were working with, people that were cooperating with us. There's a huge difference there, and this is treason, and it cannot be called anything other than treason. And, oh, by the way, as a final comment, for those who say, well, he is totally different than a lot of spies or people that have betrayed their country because he didn't release it to the Russians or the Chinese. He released it to the American public. No, he released it to every hostile intel service in the world. And that's egregious.
All right. So now the president of the United States has just pardoned him. So
commuted him.
Commuted.
Please.
Commuted. So where do I start? What does that say about this president?
It's really interesting, Sandy, that at the same time that the left, which I think is in an absolute conundrum now, it's kind of humorous, to be honest with you, are hammering about the legitimacy of a Trump presidency because the Russians hacked emails and the Russians exposed things and we've got to punish the Russians, and then their own icon turns around and releases a guy that committed an egregious act of treason. There is no consistency in that, and I don't think they know which way to go here.
That's true. And now you have to fold in Julian Assange, who made a public statement that he would not, I believe, come back here and be held accountable for his own actions by our courts unless Chelsea Bradley Manning had his sentence commuted. So now that's happened. What does that mean exactly? And is Julian Assange a friend to the left, or is he their enemy? Because he's the one that leaked the John Podesta emails that are supposedly linked to the Russians, which is supposedly, you know, is the reason why we have Donald Trump. So.
Yeah, well, that's part of the conundrum, you know. First of all, I think since the announcement was made yesterday, I haven't seen anything that said that Assange was planning to come back. I didn't see an arrival date or anything like that. So I think he was bluffing, and his bluff was called, and now we see what it was. But look, I think this is a very confusing and difficult situation for the left right now because their president was serving a political agenda. He was still trying to fulfill every promise that he made to his liberal base, and I think this commutation was part of that.
And I think, frankly, that the fact that Chelsea Manning, Bradley Manning, is transgender or has changed gender identity is part of the reason why his sentence was commuted. Part of the people, the LGBT movement, lobbied large parts of it. Because I understand the log cabin Republicans came out against this, but I'll give them credit for that at least. But a large part of the LGBT movement was lobbying for Manning's release, and I think this was another bone being thrown to the LGBT movement in the last hours of the Obama administration. So it's kind of ironic, though, to think that if this soldier had not struggled with gender, with sexual orientation and gender identity issues, had simply, released all these documents for political reasons, and
but he loved girls,
and then kind of became silent about his personal life. There would not have been the pressure to commute this sentence, and I doubt that President Obama would have done it.
You know, here's my little mind thinking. You know, I found myself wondering, you know, with all those leaks from Julian Assange of John Podesta's email and other, you know, extensive, with correspondence, pundits, Democratic operatives, the list is long, Mrs. Clinton, and there was one person missing, and that was, like, Barack Obama. And I did wonder, you know, is it possible that Julian Assange might have maybe some email from Barack Obama to people that hasn't been released? I did wonder, you know, if that, you know, there might be something. That is total speculation, I recognize. But, you know, it does make me wonder about that. So here we find ourselves in this very interesting situation. I would also say that, again, Chicago is my home, and I worked on Alan Key's campaign opposing Barack Obama before he ever got to the Senate, and so I knew his record well. You know that he voted present many times in Illinois, didn't have an opinion about anything except two things. He had an opinion about abortion. He never met an abortion he didn't love. He fought against the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. And he also never met a provision that provided more benefits to the gay, transsexual, bisexual community. That he was all about. And he passed some of the most radical information training for preschool kids anywhere in the country, which included instruction on homosexuality. So he is very interested in that, and he's also very interested in abortion. Never wavered on those things. So here we have a president doing this in the last week, but we know that the military has already moved so far to the left, Peter. Let's go to Peter first here, because they have just actually put in place, the Navy has, some of the most far-reaching rules and regulations regarding transgenders in the military, right?
Well, yes. I mean, the Ash Carter, the Secretary of Defense, announced last year on June 30th that they would lift the ban on transgender service in the military. And since then, there have been a number of defense instructions and documents and training and so forth that have been rolled out to implement that. It is scheduled to culminate on July 1st of next year, or of this year, actually, of 2017, when they will actually begin recruiting transgender people into the military. Right now, it only applies to those who are already serving. This is all being done through executive action. Congress has not weighed in on this at all. That's one thing that distinguishes this from the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Even though we felt that was a mistake, it was a mistake that Congress signed off on. And so, but this is done entirely through executive action. So we have strongly encouraged through the transition team, are encouraging the Trump administration to take action to roll back or put a halt to, further action on this. And we'll see what happens.
Is there one branch or another that has really moved out on this? Are they all pretty much in the same place? Or I thought the Navy actually was...
There has been a report about training actually taking place in the Navy, and we were contacted by at FRC by a naval reservist who was upset, who had actually experienced this training personally. And so I did write about that, but I'm not sure what's happening in the other branches. Do you know, General?
Well, a DOD directive that, you know, ultimately emanates from the White House and Ash Carter signs a directive to the department is goes to all the services, and then the Coast Guard falls in because they do whatever the Navy does. Even though they're not on a day-to-day basis, they're not part of the Department of Defense. So, yes, I mean, it's all the services. This has not impacted one service more than others. It is all the services. Now, this is what's interesting, though, and important, because it goes along with what Peter was saying. What people need to understand is, first of all, as Douglas MacArthur said in the mess hall in 1963 at West Point, when he looked at the cadets there, he said, your mission remains fixed, determined, inviolable. It is to fight and win the nation's wars, period. Okay, that's the mission of the military. Okay, now when you use the military for social experiments and you thrust something into the military and say that we're going to do this now, we're repeal it, don't ask, don't tell, women in the infantry, the transgender stuff. Along with that comes a huge, well-developed training program. And you, every soldier, sailor, airman, marine, coast guardman, is going to sit through these long, laborious hours of training on inclusion, tolerance, diversity, white privilege, all of these things. And all, everything that I just mentioned is part of the training program that's being used right now. And what's that doing? It's eating up the time that you should be using to prepare for war.
General, let's come back to that. We have to take a break here, but my guest is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who's the Vice President of the Family Research Council, and Peter Sprigg, who is a senior fellow here at Family Research Council, who's an expert on the transgender and the gay rights movement. We've been friends for a long time in the trenches together on this. When we come back, it'd be interesting to trace what has actually happened to the military on this issue since Barack Obama became president. Let's do that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is a radical move by a president who tens of millions of Americans, at the very least, thinks at various points in his administration did not have the best interests of America at heart. And this is coming on the heels of all of this caterwauling about leaks and about hacking and about sensitive information being released into the public domain and about Russia and all of our enemies using this information against us. And on the heels of all that, President Obama comes out in the waning days of his administration and gives a commutation to this individual who, remember, the prosecutors wanted to nail him on treason and aiding and abetting the enemy. So are we really concerned about the release of sensitive information that compromises our troops and our national security or not? And, I mean, I think heads are spinning after this for good reason.
Laura Ingraham, an aside, how I wish she were the new press secretary, but that's another issue for another day. Sandy Rios back with you. Again, my guests are Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and Peter Sprigg of Family Research Council, and we're talking about the fact that the President of the United States just commuted the sentence of Chelsea Manning, who was convicted of espionage and treason, really. Peter, before we go back to what's happened in the military, you looked back in time on other cases similar to Bradley Manning, and you compared them. What did you find?
Well, as I mentioned before, Bradley Manning was convicted of espionage, 5 or 6 counts of espionage. Now, other prominent espionage cases in recent decades have included Aldrich Ames, who was convicted of espionage and sharing secrets with the Soviet Union. He is serving a life sentence with no possibility of parole. Robert Hansen was also convicted of espionage, spying for the Soviet Union. He is serving 15 life sentences with no possibility of parole. And then Jonathan Pollard is perhaps more unique than Manning because Jonathan Pollard received the longest sentence of anyone ever charged with spying for an ally of the United States because Israel. Pollard leaked information to Israel. And he was sentenced to life imprisonment but was paroled, but only after serving 28 years in prison. So, and President Obama is releasing Manning after 7 years of incarceration. I think that's the comparison we should be making, not with other quote unquote whistleblowers.
Well, you got to do an article on that, Peter. That's important. I'm serious. That gives people perspective. General Boykin, isn't there something? Wouldn't you think there'd be some aspect of his criminality that could be recharged? Like if they found out there was some consequence to his Could he not be guilty of, I don't know, what, second-degree murder? By the, you know, isn't that possible? Some other charge could be brought against him?
Yeah, I think that's a legal question, and I really can't answer that. But I will tell you, you know, he was originally charged with, I think, 20 offenses. He pled guilty to 10, and I think ultimately was convicted on a total of 17. But look, had they charged him with treason, 35 years would have been should have been considered by him to be a godsend because, it really is punishable by death in wartime. And we were at war.
The other thing, too, about his sentence, they're talking about 35 years. He was also eligible for parole, according to the articles I saw, said would have been eligible after a third of the sentence, which was completed. So some less than 12 years. And he's going to be released after 7. So this terrible hardship being imposed on him would have been an additional 5 years beyond what he's already served. So if the normal process had been allowed to go forward, he could possibly have been free in 5 years. His supporters are exaggerating the hardship imposed on him.
Mm-hmm. You know, President Obama has been with us now almost 8 years, almost 8 years exactly. Mm-hmm. As we look back on the transformation just in the military in terms of social engineering alone, I know I didn't ask you guys this question ahead of time, but as I remember when I first came back to D.C., Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and I remembered it was almost like crickets. There was hardly anyone that seemed to care about that. That was amazing to me, and that was pretty radical just a few years ago because there was an understanding that this makes the military unit weaker if you allow a man who has attractions to other men to serve within the ranks. So now suddenly that's no big deal at all. And so what happened next? Do you guys remember? I mean, how did the progression go here?
Well, that passed, and then the next thing that you saw the big push on was allowing people that were in this country illegally to serve in the military as a pathway to citizenship. And then you saw the integration of women into infantry and special operations units. And then you saw the transgender policy emerge. And all of these have just been nothing but social experiments. And I blame the leadership of the military. I blame the four stars and the senior positions in our military for not just simply saying, I'm not going to support this policy. I'm not going to preside over the demise of our military. And that's one of the things that I've said consistently, and I'll get criticism for this, and I know that, but I still believe what I'm saying. Every one of the senior leaders in our military today that, you know, the service chiefs and the chairman and the vice chairman, they're compromised because the young men and women serving in the military today who we expect to go off to war when their country calls and be willing to risk and even sacrifice their lives. When they listen to a leader at that level that supports something that they know that leader doesn't really believe in, but the leader is doing it for political expediency to enhance their own career, when they say, yeah, we can absorb these budget cuts, we can absorb these sequestration cuts, and we can still be a robust army and be mobile and nobody below them, you know, they're the people that live with the consequences of these kinds of things. And they know, well, that guy's not telling the truth. He doesn't really believe that. He doesn't support that. But instead of walking in and laying his stars on the table, the president, and saying, Mr. President, I cannot support your policies. I'm out of here. Jack Singlob did that in 1976. When Jimmy Carter, Jack Singlob was an old OSS guy from World War II.
That's the precursor to the CIA,
That's
just for
right.
people that don't know. Yeah.
And he was a Distinguished Service Cross holder. And when Carter said, we're pulling out of Korea, we've been there too long, we're not needed on the peninsula anymore, Jack Singlob went public and said, Mr. President, I will not support that policy. And he was the operations director for all the U.S. forces in Korea at the time. He said, I will not support that policy. I will not participate in withdrawing these because this U.S. presence is the balance in this part of the world, and if we withdraw it, both North Korea and China will dominate in a very short period of time. Well, he got fired. But we're still in Korea, aren't we? Because he forced a dialogue on this. He forced Carter to rethink. He didn't expect that kind of resistance from a general who has sworn to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's right. And sometimes in supporting and defending that Constitution, you have to stand up and say, I will not support the policy. I'll support the Constitution, but I will not support this policy. Therefore, the only honorable thing for me to do is to resign.
And the interesting thing, I'm convinced, and I didn't serve in the military like the general, but I'm convinced that these changes are going to drive out the kind of people that we want in the military. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I mentioned the naval reservist who contacted us, who I spoke with about the transgender training. He said, he said if anyone has a problem with this, come and talk to me and I'll work with you. But it wasn't, I'll work with you to help you navigate this. I'll work with you to help you get out of the Navy. So people who object to these policies are simply being encouraged to leave.
Now, let me give you the impact of this. I said earlier, we're wasting training time. And Sandy, you may have heard me say this before, but in 1965, Jeremiah Denton was shot down over Hanoi, a Naval Academy graduate. After 10 months of torture, they finally forced him to go on camera, which is a violation of the Geneva Convention, but they forced him to go on camera and make a statement. Jeremiah Denton, during that statement on camera, and you can find it on YouTube, said, I don't know my nation's policies, but I still support them. And then they noticed, his wife noticed when she saw the video that his eyes were blinking in a very funny way. And she said, what's wrong with his eyes? And the intel analyst said, ma'am, he's blinking Morse code. He's blinking torture. Jeremiah Denton was given a Navy Cross for that act of bravery. Now go to 1 year ago this month. Two patrol boats taken off the coast of Iran. Within 3 hours, no torture. A Naval Academy graduate of 2011 who commanded both of those boats looked into the cameras for the international media and said, this is all our fault and we want to apologize to the Iranians. And we want to thank them for their hospitality. What happened? What happened to our military between Jeremiah Denton and this Naval Academy graduate of 2011? What happened to our military? We bred out the warrior ethos. And we bred it out as we were bringing in a bunch of social experiments and we were promoting leadership that was more focused on their careers than they were about the health and welfare of their soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen, but more importantly, about winning the nation's wars. But let me tell you what it's not those people's fault. It's not even that Naval Academy graduate's fault. It's not his fault because he was not prepared for that. Every man and woman on that crew, I'll promise you, never missed a class on diversity or sexual harassment or white privilege or what all those things that go with these social experiments. They never missed a class. And you know why they never missed a class on that? They never missed a class on that because the commander's performance report depended on 100% participation by all of his troops in those classes. And if you didn't have 100% participation, it was going to impact on you. So we sent those people off into harm's way without preparing them because they should have been focused on the code of conduct, which is very clear. It'll save your life if you know what you're supposed to do as a detainee or a prisoner of war. And they didn't have the right training when they went into harm's way.
Well, we have a new commander-in-chief. He's going to be sworn in tomorrow. And he has a mixed record on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hasn't exactly been our champion on the transgender issue. And he comes from New York. And you remember Ted Cruz, when he mm-hmm. was campaigning against him, talked about New York values. This is uncharted territory. And I guess the question is, one likes to think that Donald Trump seems to have a lot of common sense on a lot of things. One likes to think that if someone just had this discussion with him,
mm-hmm.
that he would come down in the right place. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, I think it's entirely possible. There are some things now that he's not going to be able to roll back. But there are a couple of key things that I think he can roll back. And I think that this is the discussion that his new Secretary of Defense has to have with him.
I want to mention one thing that I think is an important point, which is that with respect to transgender individuals serving in the military, there is a very specific reason that's not a matter of morality or values or whatever. There's a reason why they have not been allowed, and that is because it is a threat to readiness and deployability. And this, as I did the research on this issue, I found that there's a principle that to be medically eligible for service in the military means to be able to be deployed anywhere in the world at any time, to be healthy enough that that you do not require specialized medical services that are only available in the United States. And that is the standard that transgender people cannot meet, because through their hormone treat, whether it's the hormone treatments or their or surgery, particularly hormones, that they require specialized treatment that is not available anywhere in the world. And that's the specific medical reason why they're not eligible for service in the military.
Well, these are interesting times. Who would have thought even 8 years ago that this would be an issue? I don't think we could have imagined it. And so, but it is. And so here we are. We have someone who's not only a traitor to the country, but is the whole transgender issue, which we've discussed. And thank you guys for your perspective and wisdom on this. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Vice President of the Family Research Council, and Peter Sprigg, a senior fellow. Peter writes stuff on this all the time. Great stuff that's very useful to use and share to sort of make the point. Peter's always very measured and always very truthful and careful about what he reports. And I appreciate that about you, Peter. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.